one in there. Oh, Kathleen, Jim, Chris.
Hey, Dave. Thanks. Hey, Dale. Hey, Ken.
I'm a little late, but welcome, Matt.
Hi, everybody. Hey, Vern.
Very good. Well, Debbie, I guess the first thing we need to do is, now that we welcome everybody, is to call the meeting in the Finance Committee Tuesday, July 28th, meeting to order. Will you call the roll, please, Debbie?
Grindel?
Here.
Sinek?
Here.
Paverka?
Here.
And as you can see, the whole committee is here at City Hall. It's good to be back, even though we're wearing masks and everything, but it's good to see visually my fellow members of the committee, and our financial Vern is here. Maggie is here to lend her expertise, and we also have Dennis here too. So welcome everyone. We're going to be going to
Is that everybody that's on, or is there another screen? Because I would have thought the mayor would have been on.
No, that's everybody that's on. The mayor hasn't come on yet.
Okay. And just, I don't know if he forgot, or he's having tech issues, or what.
Just let him run down.
Okay, we'll wait 1 second, everybody, for the mayor to log on, and we'll be set to go. We're going to do, when I be finished by 6, there's going to be the mayor's meeting with residents of 2nd Avenue at 6 o'clock, and the three of us, Ken, Dale, and myself, expressed interest to be at that meeting to hear their concerns, and also just kind of be get acclimated to what, you know, what.
You're not a board member there, any, or a finance committee or anything?
No,
were you at one time too, or?
That's in Michael's now.
No, I thought you were at one time.
Tom and I were, I was about 20 years, I thought this was Father Caster.
20 years, wow.
And Tom was there, but Father Pete got rid of us all. It was a good thing. It was, especially when you're dealing with the city, no conflict in that. So.
He's working that night.
Okay, everybody, the mayor's working, trying to get on too, and then once he's here.
Although Michael Perry is on, and so that's the gentleman from CBiz that Dennis is working with. So I don't know if Michael's got any time constraints, or if we want to just take him first, see if there's any questions on the insurance. And
yes. Yeah, is my Michael, are you here?
Greetings, can you hear me?
Yeah,
yes. Now we can.
We can't see you, but we can hear you.
And we see your name.
Greetings, everyone. So, ask a question, and I'll just, I don't know where we are, Vern. The subject matter was the current Travelers property and auto and cyber expires at the end of August, and we don't anticipate any changes from that, other than we are looking at three other markets for comparison. And we also, and I sent Dennis the attachment, the alternatives for liability, general liability, law enforcement liability, and umbrella liability for the city, which we spent a whole year last year investigating. And I don't know if you folks have those documents in front.
Well, one, thank you, Michael, for attending. Two, we did have legislation introduced in July on first reading for the renewal of the insurance, and we know that it expires that third or fourth week of August. We're hoping that you, working with procurement coordinator Dennis, that you'll have, when you refer to some quotes, I'll use the word, some bids for renewing that insurance, and whether it's with Travelers or somebody else is more competitive, you two will analyze that and make their recommendation, and that's what will end up in the final legislation there 2 weeks from today on August 11th. Is that a doable deadline, or do you think all your quotes and everything will come back?
No, well, we'll have it tomorrow or Thursday at the latest.
Okay, good. Maybe then if you
but
get
the one of the issues is you know, this hanging item of liability for the city in law enforcement, public officials, employment practices, the umbrella. There was an email, Vern, where I think it was you commenting that a lot of other municipalities carry 10 million of umbrella, and that comment is correct. They do. It's typically tied to the general liability as well, for which you folks are self-insured. So last year, we introduced buying insurance for all those lines of coverage, including the Taft firm as the administrator of any claim under $100,000. And the cost for that was about $100,000 a year. And the carriers don't let you pick and choose what coverage you buy. For example, employment practices may be a more volatile area for the city, but the carriers aren't letting you just buy the undesirable lines. They're making you bundle the liability with the public officials, with the employment practices, and the umbrella. So we went back to the market and said, hey, last year you offered us all this coverage for $100,000. How does the pricing look this year? And the pricing is about the same, or exactly the same. And Travelers said, we'd like to participate in quoting the liability, the umbrella, the employment practices. So, and if we Travelers do that, we may be able to make improvements on the property or the auto. And that's what we'll know in a couple of days.
Okay.
Well, the bigger question, Vern, is the carriers don't want to engage in some of these activities unless the city is serious about looking at getting away from self-insurance. Otherwise, it's just a quoting exercise for property and auto and cyber. Having said that, I'll turn the call back over.
Correct. Okay, thank you, Michael. And I know two members of the committee were on council last year, and I believe it was discussed pretty thoroughly, and the decision was made to not proceed in pursuing a general liability and umbrella policy for the city. And I guess I just throw it out to the two committee members there that were on council last year and were part of that decision-making process, and see if at least, maybe not speaking for all seven council members, but for yourselves, if it's something you want Dennis and myself and Maggie and the mayor to look into, or is it something that you're just like, nope, we've done without it, and we'll keep just self-insuring, and maybe we'll put some money away in the self-insurance account to kind of make up for it. I don't know. I just want to hear from you two to give us direction, whether Dennis and, like I say, Dennis, Maggie, myself, and the mayor should work with Michael and CBiz on maybe getting some firmer quotes.
If I recall last year, and maybe is that that presentation came like at $11. I mean, it came at the because August is the month we have to make a decision. That's where a lot of these policies. So we did have. I think Michael might have been the one who gave a thorough report to us, and we decided at that point that we didn't feel it necessary. We heard the pros and cons. We know that. Sometimes, you know, I don't know what the reason why that we weren't interested in that. Maybe that sometimes settlement would be too easily getting on the insurance company. And of course, the first 100,000, I think, would be the city's liability.
Right.
And that we didn't see a need for it at that time. We've had the self-insured for so many years. Now we do have a new member this year. We have Chris is a new member, and we have a new mayor and everything, Greg's back on. So it might be not be a bad idea to check that out again and do a thorough review, since we do have new members.
I think part of the issue last year was also the fact that some of the council people were concerned about if Greg O'Brien could still handle some of those cases.
That's right.
And I think after the fact, they came back with one company that said that they would allow Greg O'Brien to handle cases up to a certain amount. Dennis, was it?
Yes, up to 100,000. And maybe if Michael was on, you can hear this. Michael, if you could address that 100,000 limit by Taft, and also with the $1 coverage, I believe it starts with $1. Am I correct?
Yeah. So to it was kind of hard to hear the clarity of the question. However, I believe it was about the 100,000 retention and using the Taft law firm exclusively. And last year, one of the, originally the contention from O'Brien was that the insurance, they didn't want to represent the insurance company because the adage was the insurance company's rate that they would pay the Taft law firm would not be acceptable, and they end up, it becomes a loss leader for the law firm. So what we did is we submitted Taft's legal fees that they charged the city, and the insurance company said, wow, these guys are great. They are lower than any panel counsel we would have used. They couldn't believe the rate that Taft is charging the city, as a matter of fact. They're very, very competitive. So the insurance company said, we would love to offer the City of Independence all this coverage with $100,000 deductible, and Taft Law Firm can adjust every claim at their own discretion up to $100,000. Once we hit $100,000, we, the insurance company, will either allow Taft to continue, or we'll become co-counsel, or we'll take it over. But because the first $100,000 is the city's coffers, they were going to let the city's legal team manage the claims. And to back up a minute, one of the problems with this whole insurance option was getting credibility from the city in their legal fees. The way the fees were recorded historically, whether it was a water main break or a wrongful termination perhaps, a trip and fall, all these things were bundled together in the ledger, and it was difficult to present a clean, what are the true legal fees you spend with Taft for things that would be covered by insurance. So because of that, it was kind of complicated to get the carriers to commit to some real numbers, but all that information was vetted, and at the end of the day, it is at $100,000 roughly, with Taft doing all of the settlements under $100,000. Go ahead.
And Michael, I had to step out. I made some copies for the members here. That $100,000 that Taft would be responsible for, is that separate than, what did you say the deductible is on, say, a general liability?
Vern, that is the deductible. The first $100,000 is on the city. It's a self-insured retention. So your real cost is the first $100,000 of legal plus $100,000 for the premium. So in essence, you could spend in the calendar year $200,000 to get $6 million of catastrophic liability backstop. So the question is it worth spending $200,000 with legal fees and insurance to give the city a $6 million bundle of liability to respond to law enforcement, legal, public officials, wrongful termination, discrimination, and trip and falls? Is that worth it? And that's the question the city has to grapple with.
Am I correct that it would be preferable if we were going to pursue a general liability policy and the associated umbrella coverage and so forth, that it's ideal to kind of match that start date with the regular auto and property insurance, but it's not 100% mandated?
No, there's no relevance to that, Vern, none.
Okay, because then there's not a pressure to make that decision by August.
No, there's not. The only pressure is the carriers are trying to bundle by leveraging. So we're trying to leverage your dollars the best
sure.
we can. So throwing those things into the mix gives us leverage. But the market is kind of skittish on it, since historically the city has chosen to not buy insurance.
Correct. Well, I for one would have to do a little more research before I was 100% in favor of this. And again, I'm not a voting member of council, and I'm not the mayor that signs the legislation, but I'd have to see what some of the other peer communities in Northeast Ohio pay for their coverage, because
a couple of them that do publish the deductible. Strongsville's got the general liability policy and an umbrella coverage of $10 million. Their deductible is zero. And the same with the city of Westlake. They have a $3 million general liability, $10 million umbrella, and their deductible on their general liability is zero. So when I hear that the quote for us is $100,000 deductible, I gotta see how that compares. $100,000, our premium, quoted premium, and we have $100,000 deductible. I'd have to see if Strongsville and Westlake, for their zero deductible, they better be paying a couple $100,000 for their policy compared to ours, or otherwise ours isn't worth it.
Well, your liability is $45,000 to be exact, with that $100,000 retention.
Okay.
And the reason it went to the $100,000 retention was because of one of them was the selection of law firm. If you want to have a deductible of $5,000 or zero, the premium for that's just general liability. Your umbrella for your umbrella liability is another $40,000. So I don't know what those communities pay. We insure 300 municipalities around the country. We have some benchmarks. It's a function of, population. It's a function of credibility of losses. And having the city coming out of a self-insured with no credibility, it is kind of difficult, which is why you want that deductible for the first year to get credibility. But to your point, Travelers and Selective, with whom we once had coverage, they are quoting at zero deductible up to 100. So we're going to be able to give you a spreadsheet in a few days that's going to show zero deductible, 10,000, 50,000, and 100. And you can see the difference in cost of what makes most sense for you if you want to consider it. The market has shrunk in the municipal business, and there's a lot of negativity associated to law enforcement legal liability, and especially in the employment practices and discrimination, and these things are exploding in the marketplace. So it's kind of, it isn't a buyer's market, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I don't think.
So we'll have those options for you. We'll have those for you in a few days.
Okay. I don't think we have enough information to really, I'm not comfortable advocating for it yet without knowing some of the details, and I don't know about the committee, but if the three of you say, hey, Vern, we were down this road before and we're fine the way we are, I'm not gonna put a ton of time into it, but if it's something that you think has some merit, given that, again, Strongsville does have a general liability and umbrella policy. Westlake does. Village of Mayfield has a general liability, only $1 million, but they have an umbrella policy of 10. Dublin down in Franklin County is part of a purchasing pool, and so is Beechwood and Solon on the east side. There's an east side group of communities that get together, and so they get their liability and umbrella through that purchasing pool. So I'd have to say, as a general statement, Independence probably is in the minority of communities that do not have a general liability policy. We've operated without it, but I could say this, we've got a wrongful termination lawsuit working its way through the courts right now from the police department from when the city was named as one of the defendants. And without a policy, we're just writing checks out of the self-insurance fund every time we get an invoice from any of the law firms working on that case, and it's totaled up to significant dollars already.
I see, Jim, you had
more than the cost of this coverage?
Pardon?
Has your legal fee exceeded the cost of the, because for example, the employment practices coverage is, with $100,000 deductible, is only $5,000 a year.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I have to look exactly what we're up to, but I know the case isn't over yet, so whatever we spent to date is only part of what it'll be in total.
I think you guys...
As long as it's under 100,000, then it was a good arbitrage of not buying the coverage.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
In that area.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes, Mayor.
Yeah, Michael, you mentioned, is it an annual, if you have a, like this suit we have, I inherited a lawsuit that's costing us a lot of money. And the question is, it's right now it's being managed out of our self-insurance fund. Did you say that annually it's a cost or it's an event a cost?
It's an aggregation of a deductible of $100,000 across all the lines of coverage. So once whether it be a trip and fall or liability.
In this particular case, if it goes on over several years, it's a $100,000 event, or is it every year?
No. It's the one event. It doesn't meet up itself.
Okay.
When the same litigation is ongoing.
Yeah. Okay. So the discipline that the city having inherited this lawsuit, it's going to cost us a lot of money, and we need to be disciplined enough to replenish our self-insurance fund at a minimum as one vehicle, and then we should look at some of these various options other communities have embraced.
Mayor Jim, how much money we paid out in claims over the course of the past several years? I don't remember that being in the budget, and to be honest with you, I don't remember what that number was, but have we paid out significant claims in the last several years?
We paid out the claims. We'd have to just go back and see how much was expended out of the self-insurance fund. And not all of it is insurance related, but the vast majority.
It's kind of we use that as kind of a good offices fund too. When things happen, something we utilize it. If you could get that for us at a later date, that would help me to make a decision.
It's one of these suits that we're going through now. Definitely, it's not just the legal fees, but if there's going to be a settlement, that would factor into too. And that settlement, at least with the numbers we've talked about, we all know is could potentially be significant, and that's on top of the legal fee. So it's just always that balancing act of, hey, Eric, are we not going to have one of these episodic lawsuits cases for a number of years, or are we? And when you are in the throes of it, like we are now, I guess it just causes you to maybe take a little closer look at having a policy. But look, if the other option is we have the self-discipline, as the mayor just indicated, we throw a couple $100,000 into that self-insurance fund every year and just keep operating the way we have.
One of the appeals of this is Michael.
Obviously, from an actuarial standpoint, you guys have been very fortunate. Again, we don't have the history to know what was paid for a trip and fall versus a wrongful termination versus an harassment allegation. But now that there's been this one event, that is a matter of fact that there's an open claim pending, which goes against your credit report, so to speak. So at the end of the day, and sometimes there's collusion, there's all kinds of wage and hour discrimination going on. There's all kinds of issues that are bombarding everyone with employment related. And so the mayor's comment, or Vern, you know, this one claim and the settlement, if it far exceeds what the insurance cost would have been to get $6 million backstop, then that's great if it's only one event. But the fact that you've only had one event is a wonderful thing. We're not seeing that kind of history. We're seeing a lot more activity. So you guys, City of Independence has been very fortunate in not being loaded up with 3 to 4 to 6 of these type of claims a year for different allegations. Not to mention, with this law enforcement legal, we're seeing a lot of litigation in. Wrongful arrest, abuse. There's all kinds of optics on that. And again, all you're doing is spending $100,000 to buy prepaid legal fees. Once you hit $100,000, to get $6 million as a credit card limit.
Well, Michael, in terms of that's the monetary cost. There's a tremendous amount of distraction that you can't put a monetary value on. But historically, for the last couple of years, historically, we've had a great record of
managing
these cases. So you're right.
You have absolutely, you're correct. And distraction, you know, once you turn it over to Taft and to the insurance company, hopefully that distraction is entrusted to others to minimize and dispose of this the most expeditious way possible, to where you're not involved daily in making decisions on what should we do? Should we throw a settlement? Should we not? It just gets handled, and you know what your stop loss is. You know immediately what it's $100,000, and what happens after that is not relevant unless it exceeds $6 million.
And Michael, you get that $6 million by adding the $5 million umbrella plus the $1 million general liability. How are you arriving at that $6 million?
That's absolutely correct. $1 million primary, and then $5 million per occurrence.
Okay.
Umbrella.
Okay.
So we'll have a spreadsheet in a few days, and I do think you should take heed to the zero deductible, the $5,000, the $10,000, and we'll have three different markets that are interested in providing options, and do give it its attention and see if we want to carry it to the next level of securing the coverage.
Hopefully you have that information you shared with us, Senator. But it's not time sensitive. I understand that we don't need to vote on something like that in August.
Right.
But the other insurance we do. I think the more information we're going to have, you can talk to other cities, what they do, and get the input from the mayor. And we'll make a decision on that maybe a month or two down the road, since there is no pressure.
That's fine.
Yeah. Because I remember the presentation I shared, I think it was later in the year, it wasn't August, I believe it was maybe September, October, I forget. But I think it would behoove us to revisit that again, since we have a new executive, two new council members and everything, to take a look at that one more time, and in light of what's going on now too with that lawsuit. So. But I know that there wasn't any legislation introduced first reading, Vern, in July. The only thing we have that rolled over to is the bond ordinances. Everything else was voted on in July. So we approved CBIZ as our representative.
Oh, okay, but not the insurance.
Not the insurance. So that I believe we have to approve here in August.
Okay.
And that. So, but I think the other, I guess, four council members here, is that a good to do a little more investigation and get more and revisit that again? And
what CBIZ, what we're doing at CBIZ, it doesn't really matter to us who the carrier is, or whether it be the pool, which is a claims made arrangement, which exposes the city to some tail issues I won't bore you with right now in that pool. However, whether it be a pool, whether it be self-insurance, whether it be no deductible or 100, we really, that's up to the city to decide. We're simply maintaining a consulting fee, and there is no commission in the product for, I think, I forget what our fee was, but Jerry Grisco, our CEO, I think we've committed forever since we've done this at $10,000 a year, regardless of the premium, and that's what we're doing even with this other coverage. So we're just being consultants, telling you what we think you should do and giving you options. There is no, we're totally transparent on what carrier and what market you should be in.
Well, that's refreshing.
But travelers being in the city, they have thought that because they are a taxpayer in the city, that therefore there would be preference to them. And 3 years ago, they weren't the carrier. We moved it to Travelers, and they did reduce the cost from where it was with Selective. And Selective is one of the largest writers, and they do Cuyahoga Falls and a lot of municipalities locally, and they're very competitive, and they want it back in this year. So we're going to have their options as well, and the politics on Travelers, you know, it's the tail of the tape. So they may be great, but if they can't be competitive, regardless of the nature of their relationship with the city, that's your decision again.
Good. Well, it looks like we'll have some competitive, hopefully competitive pricing to look at, and then that decision to factor into too, given that Travelers is a taxpayer here in the city of Independence too.
Very good. Well, Michael, thank you. We look forward to your input that you're going to give to us on council, as well as the mayor and finance director. And then Vern, if you could give us some input, like from Wesley, from some of the other communities, what they do. And with that information, we'll definitely revisit this, not probably in August, but maybe September or October, and that to make a decision.
And we'll also include a benchmark report that gives you a benchmark against other municipalities with your population size and revenue size relevant to what they're doing on a countrywide basis. So it won't be limited to Northern Ohio. We can give you a benchmark across the country and see this is what municipalities of your size are doing for insurance. And you can draw some reference from that as well.
Very good. You can't have enough information as far as for us to make a decision. So thank you, Michael. And I guess you'll pass that information on to council
yes.
if you receive this.
We will. Thank you.
I will work with Dennis and with Vern. We'll get you the document in the next several days. Thank you all. And we'll be in touch. I'm glad to revisit or do whatever is appropriate at your convenience.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
So Debbie, you're on my
end.
There's another, thank you, Michael, you too. There's another legislation request. I don't know if I have to put it in formally or if you and Don will just work on that with Dennis to have legislation on the August 11th legislative agenda for the, I don't know, whatever it's called, property casual insurance.
Well, Vern, I already submitted an open request.
Okay, good.
Legislation.
Perfect.
Because that's been an annual. We've had that for every year in August for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, I understand it's a little hard to introduce it in July because they won't quote prices until within 30 days, less than 30 days of the expiration date or something. So that's why these quotes aren't coming in until the last part of July, because the coverage expires late August.
Right, and that's what we always have to vote on. We don't have a chance to put it on second reading or anything. We have to vote on first reading.
But it's an annual thing, so it's not like it's a surprise.
Yeah.
And it's really just you're approving the carrier and the premium.
Yeah, yeah. Now, getting back to the agenda, we'll finish up with one and two. That's the primary. And just for this, I know you have given us information around the process with the five-year capital plan.
Correct.
And
and that's all I really had, just to let you know we started that ball rolling with directors. If the goal is to pass a 2021 to 2025 capital improvement plan by the December meeting, we're starting in July, so I've been able to take that off of Maggie's plate because I know she was trying to juggle so many balls there for last summer and last fall until I came aboard. So I think we should be much more ahead of the process this time and actually put a document before this body that is more realistic for us to discuss and debate at that time, instead of having way more listed in there than realistically can be funded.
I know you mentioned in your memo to us that you've added, of course, 2025, you added a line for property acquisition. Is it possible for council to get the draft of this, the same document that's been used, so this way we have some kind of reference?
Yeah, it's basically the document you adopted in December, and I just added a column on the right that says 2025, and I added a column below that said land acquisition, but there's no really dollar amounts in there yet, so I can provide that for you, but there's really nothing more in there. So until I start getting the feedback from the directors, who then sit with the mayor, and they'll figure out each of their their request, and then it'll, that whittling process will start.
Very good. All right. Thank you. So that basically covers the five-year capital plan, just so that you have started the
correct
process, and it will be, hopefully, if we could get it on first reading in November, it would be ideal that we have input and everything, and then
sure.
approve the finished product in December.
We'll make that a goal.
Very good. Very good. Now we'll go to the main part of our agenda, which is, again, this. It was on first reading in the July meeting. It's the ordinances, companion ordinances 65 and 66. And from my understanding, reading your memo too, or some of your information, Vern, is that you'd like to see both of these get approved in August to give you the flexibility when the time comes to move in either direction?
Correct. Only for that reason that the municipal debt markets have experienced a little volatility this year. And if you saw some of those charts that both long-term and short-term rates were quite higher for a period of time there earlier this year when the COVID hit and the market kind of got spooked, and our financial advisor, Man Stachinski, is online with us, so he could chime in if needed and add to anything I'm saying. But and you don't know what's going to happen between now and when we have to pull the trigger on either renewing the notes or selling bonds or a hybrid. You've got an election coming up. You've got riots in cities. You've got equity markets that some think are way ahead of earnings, and that's shooting for a fall, and it's just so many unknowns, and so I think the city would best be served by being able to exercise either option when the time comes, based on what's happening in the worldwide economy, what's happening in the U.S. economy, what's happening in the municipal debt market at that point in time, so that we can make the best decision for the city based on the existing conditions at that time, not trying to make a decision here in July, thinking we know exactly what those conditions are going to be in September or October, plus or minus. So that's the goal. If council disagrees and wants to pass one or the other or neither, that's council's option. My preference is to pass both. And I think, Matt, you could attest to the fact that you advise a number of municipalities across the state and maybe one even over state lines. And I believe we're not the only municipality that you work with that are going down this path, that there are at least one, if not more, have tried to give themselves the same flexibility. Is that understanding correct?
Well, that's exactly right. Good afternoon, all. Nice to join you. We've seen, because of what has been described as volatility and uncertainty, the path that many councils has at least considered is to have at least a safety net for their strategy. If they choose to proceed down the pathway of bonds, that's fine, but should the bond market be disrupted and the notes provide them with some safety, that's a nice alternative to have as financing alternative. But in addition to that, you know, I think back to last year where we suggested the city council, when council voted to roll the notes, that we would revisit the issue of notes versus bonds on a yearly basis and bring forth the concept of what should we do with the outstanding debt profile? Does it make sense to issue bonds and convert some of these to long-term fixed rate or keep some of it in the form of short-term notes? So for both reasons, the council is being asked to consider the legislation that provides you not only with security, but with the strategy to, issue both long-term, short-term, or some hybrid of notes and bonds. So it really fulfills two goals. Hopefully that helps.
Thank you. Well stated. So that's it in a nutshell. There's really nothing new to report except some of the charts I see, Vice Mayor, you're holding them. I just tried to You know, I have a real estate background, and one of our tenets is comparables. You know, what do you, how do you value a house? You compare it to other similar type homes that have sold recently. Same thing to try to get a handle on at least what the current short-term note market is and what the long-term bond market is. I've been trying to keep track of a lot of Ohio municipalities, the ones issuing some one-year notes, and what those rates have generally been. And Matt will caution that yield column, that far column to the right, that's not everything, but it's everything that I have available to me as far as the rates, and the actual yield might be a little bit higher than that. But I think the point is, you can see just from April, when all these short-term rates were 1.55, 1.3, 1.6, and now it seems like it's all in the 0.35 to 0.50 range. And then the same if you look at that bond offering, there hasn't been as many, but there are a number of cities locking some rates in. And again, same too, I only, on this spreadsheet, only have to go back to May, but even since May, in the last 90 days, the yields that municipalities are able to lock in rates for has gone down significantly. So I try not to talk about it too much and jinx herself, but I'm just hoping that this current market stays stable for another couple of months when we get to exercise our option, and that we're able to take advantage of what I view as favorable market conditions either way right now. You look at what historically rates have been, and any of you that follow, whether it's mortgage markets or municipal borrowing markets, we're at some pretty darn historic low times here, if not, at least in some markets, all-time lows. So it is a good time to be exercising one of these options.
And is this an all-encompassing or just a sampling in the state? Because it seems like there's far more municipalities going with the notes, the short-term notes, as opposed to the long-term bonds, unless we don't have the full list of communities.
Yeah, and that'd be a question, Matt, on do all communities post on that MO, or is that just select ones that participate, or that's most of them?
No, it's required that they post on Emma.
Okay.
And for the most part, they comply, but I won't say you capture everything. Generally speaking, you know, there's more notes that are issued on an annual basis than bonds, and it only because over the course of a year, there might be cities that issue two or three or four different notes, where they might just do one bond issue every two or three years. So you'll likely see, I think on that list that Vern had supplied, you might likely see somebody like Lake County or Lorain issue multiple times on that same list where they've got multiple notes. So it's not uncommon to see more notes than bonds.
And the note one does go include April and that, whereas the bond one only goes back to May. So I think some of the rates I was seeing earlier than that weren't really applicable, so I cut those columns off. But the note offerings, if you look at that sheet, and there are quite a few of them, but one thing that all of them have is they're all under $10 million. They're all single digits left of that second comma, whereas we're looking at something in that $15, $16 million range, and no community, the ones that I followed in Ohio, and I try to just list cities, villages, or townships. I haven't included like counties or school districts and some of those borrowings. I wanted the borrowings to be apples to apples, but none of them have gone out for one-year notes for anything excess. What's the highest I see here? 8.1 million. That's the highest. So we're more than double that. We'll be about double that for what we renew. So that could be telling too, that most of these communities don't have the size of debt that we do, and therefore they've chosen to keep it in more in a short-term instrument compared to the total debt load that the City of Independence has currently.
All right, so my comment or observation with what the administration is asking council to do, if I understand it correctly, the administration is asking council to pass both of these ordinances, which, if that comes to pass, by way of viewing things, council will have taken itself out of the equation of deciding how this comes out. It will be turned over to the administration, and the administration only, to decide in December whether to go long-term, short-term on these things. It eliminates council from further involvement in this decision, and that leaves me very uncomfortable.
Okay, well, one is before December. They mature in December, so there's a 90-day window when we could start but affect the sale. So that's as early September. It is a proposal that hasn't been proposed here in Independence before, and the previous finance director would always go with a single option, and it's just notes, and always renewing those notes, and the bonds were a separate deal, but these specific notes dealing with some of the infrastructure projects in our commercial districts, where his MO was just notes, 1 year, 1 year, 1 year. So there was only a need to present one option to council. You're getting the sense that, again, I can't read what the market's gonna be, but let's assume that the markets stay the way they are. You saw, I shot an email out yesterday that I personally am gravitating toward the bond one. That if we could, I heard you talk, Councilman Sinek, about maybe not doing a 20-year if we did bonds and doing something less than that. I'm not so comfortable maybe going with the 10-year because that would increase our annual debt service a little bit. But I am comfortable. I'm looking at a maximum of 15 years and locking in what hopefully is an overall rate of all the different tranches of the sub bonds within the master bond, I'll call it, of something less than 2%. So if it was just me, I would be advocating for 2020-66 and asking council only to approve that. But I think it's also smart, as I've said, stated, and financial advisor Matt Staczynski have stated, that we kind of need something in our back pocket just in case this bond market blows up for whatever reason between now and September, October, when we could do the sale. And if we only pass the one and we don't have that other option available, we're stuck. And so
if we pass both, it is your decision then at that point, right? Council,
it is.
And yeah. So,
Jim, I think you're right.
So to his point, and perhaps something that you could consider, is that you can add a clause in the legislation that says that whatever decision is made will be confirmed by the legislative body at the next meeting. And that way you can put all the information in there about, you know, the competitive bid and how they did it and everything, and then you can have a conversation.
It does council no good to approve an action after it's already been taken.
Or at least we have the opportunity to see whatever they did. I mean, these guys are doing a lot more competitive bidding, and so I think that should be acknowledged. And at the same time, you know, that you almost inherently, it's also accepting a bid in a sense, you know what I mean?
Well, let me ask, there's six of the seven council people online and the mayor. This is not an executive session, so we could kind of say a call votes to tell me your opinion. Would you prefer one or the other, or are you comfortable with both? And if there's a consensus amongst the six of you and we find out what Councilman Narduzzi is, maybe we don't need both on. If both aren't going to get passed and everybody, or at least four people, have a preference for one or the other, then maybe that's all we need to do. I'm just here to affect whatever the legislative body and the mayor decide, but I have presented what I think is
a viable option, and that's making sure we have some options available to us. But if council decides, hey, it's just one or the other on the August meeting, well, then be aware that we are locked into that then, and then we don't have that other option available should the municipal debt market get a little topsy-turvy.
Yeah, my concern is what's on the table takes it out of council's hands and turns it over to the administration in its sole discretion. That's not good policy, the way we think of it. That's probably the reason why there's been one reason. That's why there's been only one choice on, you know, approved. It's because, you know, the way the way this is playing out now, council would have no further say in what the administration chooses to do in terms of short or long term. And that's not a good place for us to be.
Do you have a preference for one or the other?
Well, I think there's also further discussion that needs to happen in that regard. I've asked twice for a forecast of revenue by TIF district, because there's a revenue stream that's available to settle these debts that we've not considered. None of us know what that revenue stream is for each one of these debt obligations. And until we know that, it's hard to fathom. I mean, that revenue stream could be enough to retire the debt in 3 years, or it might not be enough to sell it in 20 years. And until you know those things, it's hard for me to make a decision about long-term versus short-term and exactly how to do these things. Because again, that TIF revenue stream, my way of thinking, maybe others disagree, but the major purpose of those funds is to retire this debt. And we haven't really discussed at all or considered at all what those dollars are.
I appreciate that. I've stated numerous times, though, that I take the attitude, these are not revenue notes or revenue bonds that are only backed by TIF revenue. If they were, the interest rates we would be paying were a lot more. Because to get favorable borrowing rates, these either notes or bonds, these are general obligation instruments. The full faith and credit of the city is available to pay these back. That means income tax, property tax, hotel, motel, bed tax, amusement tax, all the different revenues.
And TIF.
Right. All of that is available. So I look at the entire revenue stream versus just that one component. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, a couple of things. It's like almost like you're playing
sorry, that was me.
It's almost like you're in the middle of a card game. We don't know what the rates are going to be like reflect in a couple months. But we certainly need to know or get a flavor. And I think the purpose of these discussions is you get a better flavor of every person's thought process relative to how much debt they want to take on, how they want to pay back that debt. And I think that if you're talking, TIF generates a couple million dollars a year for repayment purposes. You take $17 million of debt. If I can, I happen to agree with the finance director, if I can lock my exposure into less than 2%, I'm a buyer. Because I know my fixed principal, I know what I'm going to be paying in interest, and I know that that component of that debt structure is managed. If we take on, if the opportunity would present itself and we would see a new opportunity, economic development opportunity, where we need another $10, $20 million, we still have some flexibility then. Matt, is that accurate, or is it pie in the sky?
No, I think there's reasonable metrics around what you're suggesting, and I guess I would say it this way to try to simplify the math. Mayor, you're exactly right. The city receives about $2 million worth of TIF as of last year, and that's expected to continue, assuming that the value of the properties that generate that TIF continue to be equal to what they are now. That's a big if in this environment. But let's assume that there's $2 million worth of TIF revenue coming in on an annual basis. For the next 8 years, the city pays almost $1 million in debt service, non-debt service already incurred. Okay? That leaves about $1 million left over if you assume that the revenue stream is flat. Now, we hope it grows. We expect it to grow. We have some TIF projects that we're going to hopefully going to produce some value that will increase the amount of DIF revenue. But who knows what that's going to, whether or not that gets produced, or that's just an offset to what might otherwise be declines in DIF revenue by those who appeal or challenge their current value. And that's a reality we have to face, that is likely going to happen. I will share one instance with you of City of Avon. He had a building that was appraised at, it wasn't an old building, it was inside of 3 or 4 years old, that was valued at $17 million, recently appraised at $10 million. There's, you know, these office buildings, you can assume that folks will start to challenge. That's happened in downtown Cleveland, and when one catches word that it's being appraised lower, the word spreads, and it's a domino effect. So we have to be a little careful here about projected TIF revenue. And there's one of the reasons that we're trying to manage this debt, but also maintain some flexibility. We have to be, you know, just like I said, keep an eye on what the existing revenue stream looks like, measure that against what you're already obligated to pay, for at least the next 8 years, you've got about $1 million, and then it falls off.
For the next 8 years, what you're saying, next 8 years, even if we were to lock the 15, 17 million to 15, 20 years, you're going to have $1 million, $1.2 million in principal, plus the million that you're going to have for the next 8 years. So you're really not in a bad position, so to speak, if things are even stay relatively flat.
You'll basically, if things stay flat, you'll be, for the next 10 years, you'll be taking all your TIF revenue and applying it to existing debt, or existing bonds, and current notes converted to bonds. That's right. True. That is true.
But still, that existing TIF revenue is not enough to service the annual principal and interest on the combined notes and bonds. We're still supplementing the TIF revenue.
That's a question that needs to be answered, Ernest. It's the very question I've asked you twice now.
I just provided that to you guys yesterday, that it shows whether, if it's a 20-year bond at 2%, our total annual debt service is $2.4 million. If we go down to a 15-year, that's 2.6. The annual TIF revenue last year was $2.179 million, so we are supplementing it already.
But we need to know that TIF revenue by TIF district to match it against the specific TIF debt, because the ceiling debt
is not TIF debt. None of this is TIF debt. It's general obligation.
I get it, but there is a debt associated with the Seelig Road project that also has a TIF revenue source associated with it. And my contention is we need to match that TIF revenue against that Seelig Road debt. We need to match the TIF revenue from the Northeast Quadrant against the debt that's in the Northeast Quadrant and see where we are at with those cash flows, to the extent that they can or cannot satisfy that debt. It's an open question as to whether or not those cash flows from that TIF revenue is enough to pay off that debt in and of itself. The other thing about TIF revenue is that if the city doesn't have a need for the revenue, the TIF will not be renewed by the county. To the extent we have debt, to pay off that debt, that revenue source is viable because we have the debt. To me, knowing, it's kind of like house money, if you will, the TIF revenue. If there's no debt, we might not collect the TIF revenue. So the interest rate risk is less in the TIF because there's a revenue stream there. And that's why I become less concerned about the long-term interest rates change in the TIF districts than I would with perhaps other debt, because we have this revenue source that wouldn't otherwise be there but for the debt.
Well, once we pay off all the debt that you attributable to the TIF districts, we have all the debt that we owe ourselves, all the advances from the general and municipal income tax fund to these TIF districts. That's the only way we've been able to do what we've done, is by borrowing and advancing millions and millions of dollars, and it's up to 18 or 20 million. So it's going to be a long time before the county has a leg to stand on to
deny us the renewal of a TIF, because even if our debt was down to zero, we still have $20 million of advances to pay to ourselves. So I'm not concerned about the TIF revenue, the TIF districts being waylaid by the county because we pay our debt off.
Isn't there sort of a double counting in that interfund debt and the third party debt? Because to my way of thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong, the TIF fund will receive TIF revenue. And that cash comes into the TIF fund.
Correct.
Which can then repay the advance to the city's general fund. When the money then lands in the general fund, that same money can be used to repay the debt to third party. So there's a linking there, and that will amortize the internal debt over time. At the same time, it's paying off the external debt. They're all linked together. If you follow the debits and credits and the bouncing ball of the cash, the one will get paid off basically at the same rate as the other. We need to know to be able to evaluate these things, that sort of revenue by TIF district against the debt that's outstanding.
Why is that so important, Mr. Erdman?
Well,
why is that so important?
Let's say we have a $100 million debt on TIF Project A.
Yeah.
And the annual revenue from that TIF district is $100 a year. We know we have a problem. But on the other hand, if we have a TIF district with $10 million of debt that's going to generate $20 million of revenue over the next 10 years, we have no worries about covering the debt, the interest, whatever it's going to be. Even if long-term interest rates go up, we have it covered because of the TIF. And right now, I'm flying blind. I don't know where we are revenue to debt in each one of these TIF districts. So it makes it very difficult for me to understand and evaluate whether to go long or go short or pay down or accelerate payments on principal without knowing what the revenue stream is associated with each individual line item of debt.
I'm not sure. I mean, maybe I'm just a businessman. I don't know. I just look at how much money's coming in and how much money's going out and how much do I owe? And how am I going to pay it back? And when am I going to pay it back? How am I going to pay it back? So I don't look at every individual TIF district. I look at how much we owe, how much we got revenue coming in, different sources of revenue. And I guess the question is, council has to just decide if they're willing to create some flexibility and they're willing to go long on some things and go short on others. I mean, it's I don't know if it's that complicated. I don't want to make it more complicated by talking about individual TIF districts when I already know that when everybody, the analysts look at it in the aggregate. I don't know. I've never heard of an individual TIF district calculation being a factor in terms of our financial ability to move forward. But maybe I'm out of touch.
Candidly, I do believe that is some institutional knowledge that left with John Maris. He had that in his head and in his experience. And he has since left the building, and we are less well off because of it. I mean, to John's credit, he handled that stuff masterfully, and none of us had to get involved. But also, to echo your comment there, I do agree with you. It would be good to have flexibility to go long on some of these things and short on others. But I think that's a decision that needs to be made almost one by one by council, not for council to just hand over to the administration and say, do what you think is best. I don't think that's the right approach.
Well, I don't think that's what the administration's saying. The administration said, one, are you open to flexibility of going with bonds or just notes? If the answer by the majority of council is, no, we want to stay with the current policy, that's a decision, and then we follow that decision, that direction. If council says they're open to notes and bonds, then tell me the cap on the bonds. If you don't want to give me a cap, then tell me, make a decision. But anything we decide, it's going to be in the best interests of the city. And no one's blind on this. I don't feel that that's the case at all. I think everybody's, we're having these discussions. And these discussions are going to generate opinions of seven members of council that have to make a decision. And all I'm suggesting, I support the finance director's willingness to be, I advocated for last year, if I can lock in for less than 2% any money I can ever borrow, public or private, I'm a buyer. Because I know my fixed debt structure, and it's a discipline when we look at $10, $20 million projects down the road, have a discipline and have to have some discipline to be that flexible. So that's the theory behind my strategy, what I believe is best for the city. If the rates are above 2, I'm not really a buyer. But sub 2, I don't know, guys. I mean, sure, this is good. The bonds are going to, the notes are going to stay low for some artificial time, but at some point, we're going to have to pay back $1 trillion of debt. And I want to make sure the city's got some hedge to be able to protect itself, knowing that here's what I got to pay to stay in good standing with the bonding agencies. Here's what I'm going to pay. And as long as I pay my bills, they can't change my rating. I'm just confused a little bit as to the need for some of these details. I understand new wanting to learn that, and that's fine, but you're sophisticated enough to know that in the aggregate, you're going to make a decision. This legislation is one of two forms, and that's really the decision.
I think Jimmy had a point to make.
Just to answer the reverse question, I'm willing to go with both strategies and see what the best deal is at the end of the day. So I mean, if it comes down to November, December, whatever it is, you guys make the call based on the negotiations, the markets, and everything else. So I think that giving you that flexibility, as we talked about at the May meeting, makes sense to me, and I'm still willing to go along with that.
And here's the parameters. If you're sub 2%, then you got to be say you're willing to go with some bonds. If you're not willing to do that, that's okay. But we just need to know.
And Mayor, I agree with you. I think if we can get a long-term rate less than 2% for as many years as the bonds will be, I think we have to take it. I know that in simplest terms, we all have mortgages on our homes and everything, and we've all had probably fixed and some have gone variable, everything, and you take a risk. If you go, you never know what's going to happen, especially with the election coming up this year and how volatile the world is. You're taking an awful risk if you're going to go on that year-by-year ban policy, because there's going to come a time that we're going to shoot ourselves in the foot, and all of a sudden you're looking at interest rates maybe 3, 4, 5 times greater. If we can lock it in less than 2%, I like that parameter if we can do that. The pass, you know, with the idea that we go with bonds is less than 2%, because I think that's a bargain. I don't see rates 10 years from now being as low as they are now, but that's my is with Jim too, to give you the flexibility and the trust that you know that if it's going to be above 2%, then we, you know, you might want some mixture of the two, or maybe go with all the bands again. Yeah. But if it's 1.85 or 1.9. I think the time is to lock it in. That gives us some kind of certainty in planning for in the future and that.
Thank you. How fast do we anticipate this bond rate to change? And basically, the bond rate has gone down fairly slowly. If any place in the last 5 or 10 years, we'd have jumped into bonds at that time, we would have been big losers. Correct.
Not so sure, because last year in August, when 2019, when council was making this decision, you actually had the inverted yield curve at that time, where long-term rates actually went lower than short-term. So, had you been able to sell the instruments then in August, you could have locked in a rate long-term less than you could have short-term. I don't know what it was at that time. But you could see on either the notes or the bonds how much they've changed just since March and April. They've gone down significantly, both on the long-term and the short-term end. And there's volatility out there. You know, I can't call what's going to happen on the world stage over the next 30, 60, 90 days. And any singular event could cause mayhem. Will it likely happen? I don't know, but it's good to have some options if it does.
To complement what you're saying, every country in the world is massively deficit spending due to shutdowns. There's very little coming in, and there's a lot going out. So that has to have an influence on the world market. That has to have an influence on the American market. So by the time you're looking through this, you'll know some of the election results, you know, in terms of the markets, how they behave based on the election results, because they swing pretty quickly. So, you know, I think you kind of need that flexibility, because there will be some wild swings. And if the country's all shut down again, you know, they're talking about doing that in Europe, maybe even here, that has an impact on us. And you just referenced that during the shutdowns, interest rates were a lot higher, marginally higher than they were today. So I guess they just think that it's so hard to predict. You're going to have to. You have a game day decision, and I think as many tools as you need, I think you should
look at it in the aggregate. Our income tax peaked in 2018. Last year in 2019, it actually turned the corner down. It was slightly down from 2018, and this year we're $500,000 down from last year. Maggie and I are looking at the cash position right now, and if you watch the monthly reports, we've got $18 million sitting in those CDs at Independence Bank. We've just been able to renew them. Well, we're looking now that we've got two that are expiring the first week of August, and we don't think we're going to be able to renew those. We're going to have to let them expire and put them into the money market so we can pay our day-to-day bills. Is it the end of the world to go from 18 million of CDs to 17? No. But it's maybe the first chink of, hey, you know, you guys have been pretty steady for quite a long time here. You've been able to weather everything pretty good by keeping this 18 million block of CDs in with Independence Bank at a real nice rate. Well, guess what? Now I don't know. Now it's down to 17. Is it a short-term thing? I don't know. But it now that's starting to mirror what happened with income tax. It peaked, and now it's going down a little bit. We have this 18 million for a while, and now we're going to have to probably be down to 17. Watch the income tax collections, watch everything. So it's kind of exciting, it's dynamic, but it's anything but a stable environment in any business, city, financial world right now. There's a lot of variables going on, and I see a lot of those Second Street people walking in, so we're probably getting to our end.
Keep going, but
Chairman Grindel? Chairman
Grindel? Councilwoman Capusta would like to speak.
To Vern's question. First of all, yeah, we used to in the past, we'd pick one option because the past was the past. And even when my husband and I had talked about like our own family finances, he would say, well, this is how we're moving forward in retirement unless there's a major world event, unless there's a pandemic. He actually used those words. I'll get to him later. But anyway, well, we're there. And I think that our finance director's proposal of us having the options, we vetted those options thoroughly. I have not heard anyone say, oh, that's absolutely bad. And, you know, the majority say, I don't want to do that. So I think we are in the best position to maintain the flexibility by looking at both options. I respectfully disagree, Councilperson Sinek, with your implication that we're giving up and we're passing over that authority somewhere else. I don't see it as an abdication of authority. I see it as an acceptance of responsibility, being that right now we're in such a fluid situation. We want to position our city, because that's what we're all here for, to do the best by our city. And that doesn't only include the seven of us. It includes our administration. It includes our finance director, who I don't see as oppositional to us. I see as them working in tandem in the partnership with us. If we believe that, then I want to give them the tools to make the best decision at the optimal moment in time. And therefore, I would support these, having both of them available.
Thank you. Chris, do you have any, any comments?
I agree with Kathleen and Jim. I think we need to leave our options open. And like we all said about, you know, if we can get a low interest rate and hold that for X amount of years, it's a great business decision. So I agree with the rest of them.
Thank you, Chris. And I think just to set the record straight, the TIF, the revenue that TIF generated has really no bearing on this decision at all. The money is used to pay back some, but it says really no. It's not, the bottom line is locking in a certain interest rate, because we're going to pay back. I mean, whether the TIF revenue is up or down or whatever, we still got to pay back from the general obligation.
The current TIF revenue in total, I have not done the analysis by district, but just in total, the $2.179 million that the city received in 2019
is not enough to cover the annual debt service. And so it's not even enough to pay that back. So we're not even paying the advances back yet either. So I just want to correct that, that we're not able to simultaneously throw some money at debt and throw some money at the advances. It's all going to debt, and we're still supplementing more on debt. So it's going to be a long time before the TIF districts themselves are able to start paying back the money that's been advanced to the TIF district. So
that's by design. So, you know, the Sealand Road TIF district wouldn't produce that type of revenue. You've got the dormant buildings and parking, you know, you've got things there that would not generally produce the type of revenue that you want. Same thing with our new TIF district up on the, you know, on Rockside by, you know, Rockside West Boulevard. We don't think that that would pull in the type of revenue that we're discussing up in full for several years. It's not a mature district as yet. So I think it's inherently difficult. You know, I mean, it's good effort. I think it's good information to know, but it's not decision-making information, in my opinion.
And that's why I think we put in, when we established those TIFs, it's a very broad base as far as what the purpose of the TIF money is for.
As broad as possible.
Yeah, as broad as possible. To
justify its existence for the maximum of 30 years.
Keep in mind, Mr. Chairman, that I hear the TIF district at Sealing Drive, and that was technically, if you take income tax and TIF revenue from that district, it was paid off in roughly, could have been paid off in 7 years. But because we don't count the income tax revenue generated from that, you know, we still have debt. Technically, we have debt on that TIF. But you have to look at it in the global sense that it's a TIF district isn't necessarily just about the TIF revenue. It's the income tax revenue that is really the driver of, it should be, at least traditionally, it was a driver for the investment in these TIF districts.
Well, Chairman, I know I've got 5:59 and a 6 o'clock public hearing. Yeah. So I don't know, to me, it looks like there's at least 4 votes to keep both on and vote them up or down at the August meeting. Councilman Narduzzi, I can't speak for it. Councilman Viverka, I'm not sure where you stand, but at least there's 4 that seem to be amenable to passing both at the August meeting.
Well, I think you've heard 4 positive that support the approving both options.
Leaning toward maybe the long term if the rate is going to be.
I like the idea of having that 2% negative. But if we can get long term less than 2%, let's go for the bonds.
Let's sleep good at night, right?
Yes. Yeah. At least we. There's one certainty in this uncertain world that we.
Our parents' house didn't have 2% with the 50s when they went all
By the way, I didn't hear anybody opposed to it. I just heard questions being asked. So.
Obviously, I'm opposed to it, but you know. Okay. Given the choice between the known and the unknown, short-term interest rates are more known than long-term interest rates. If we get to December and there's an opportunity for short-term interest rates to be 0.5% or less, which based on this currently is not beyond the scope of impossibility, if we basically could get a year interest-free, why would we not take that with certainty as opposed to locking in a long-term rate that is uncertain? Even I would take the short-term rate
and uncertain.
There's less certainty. I'm just saying, generally speaking, the longer-term rates are less certain as to what's going to happen than short-term rates.
Right.
We're at 2% now. They could be less. They could be more. We don't know. But there is far more certainty on the certainty scale. There's more certainty to short-term rates than there is long-term rates. And so if we get to December and short-term rates continue to be as low as they are, which personally I fully expect, the way the Fed and the U.S. government have pumped $2 trillion of cash into the economy, it's going to keep interest rates low for short-term rates low for a foreseeable, for a long period of time. And again, if we have a chance to get basically a year's of our debt at little or no interest, I would lock in at that. And see what happens along the road.
I'm not here to argue with Councilman Sinek. Short-term interest rates just a couple of months ago all exceeded 1.5%.
and now they're below 0.5%. That's a 67% move in a few months. To me, that's pretty volatile.
What if you buy it now?
That's not too much certainty.
What if you buy it now?
What about it's pre-pandemic versus post-pandemic, pre-stimulus versus post-stimulus. Yeah, the government pumped $2 trillion of cash into the economy, and that has a depressive effect on interest rates.
What will inflation have? Because all this money being printed all around the world, with nothing to back it, what's going to happen with inflation in a few years?
Like gold stocks are doing real good.
Yeah.
Gold are covering their money into something that
inflation is good for borrowers, for debtors, because the money you pay back is less valuable than
cheaper dollars.
Cheaper dollars. And that is what I believe our federal government and the Federal Reserve is trying to engineer, is inflation, because of the tremendous debt that the nation has. You got to grow your wealth, you got to grow your economy, and you got to have inflation to make those debts manageable. And I'd also point out, it's not the debt, the balance of the debt itself, it's the interest costs. You know, we as individuals, we have a certain limited life in this world. We're going to be here for so long, we want to pay our debts off before we pass. But the city will live forever, and the city has the power to raise its revenue, and the city will be able to pay that debt back. The principal of it, it's the interest cost that is the penalty. And if interest rates were zero, wouldn't we borrow just as much as we possibly could? It's the interest cost, not the principal balance.
There's always the discipline too of paying the principal methodically too. There's a certain discipline in the public sector too.
Eric, you better go. You got some people waiting.
I'll say thank you very much, everyone. You gotta leave.
Thank you, Kathleen. Chris, thank you for joining us.
Guys, have a great night. Thank you, Matt, for being on.
Thank you, Matt.
Bill's been very quiet.
I have been. I'm just wondering about the urgency. I mean, we're looking at making a decision now in August that most of this isn't going to likely happen for a couple more months.
You said September, I think, for
90 days. They mature on December 4th.
Right.
11-4, 10-4, 9-4.
Okay.
We could sell the new instruments September 4th or thereafter. So that decision could be made before the September council meeting. If we do long-term bonds, We will have to come up with an offering statement and make a rating presentation to Moody's or S&P or one of the big rating agencies. So we might not be able to affect it until later in September. But Matt's suggestion is we shouldn't go down the path of preparing an offering statement and a ratings presentation if we don't have approval from Council to do that, because there's part of the cost involved in that to do that.
And I think you've kept us up to date on when that decision is being made.
Hopefully, I've been very transparent in the time I've been here in giving you enough information, and maybe it's too much information. I don't know, but I'm trying to be as transparent, to use that word, and open, and here's everything I have to help you get comfortable making a decision. And as Michael Perry said from CBIZ, look, they're not getting paid by commission. They're just a flat fee, so they're just here to advise and make some suggestions. Here's the decision body, and I'm the same way with legislation. I could recommend and advise based on what I bring to the table, but it's ultimately council decision of the mayor whether he's going to sign the legislation. So I thank everybody for the input. I'm available to talk between now and 2 weeks from today, unless there's more to talk about, it looks like we'll keep both on the agenda and see how they get voted. So, because the urgency is they do expire, they do mature in December, it's a very low chance, but that's how the city of Cleveland got in the trick bag back there in the late 70s with Crescentis. They had all this short-term instruments, and then the business community said, hey, we're going to show you, and nobody showed up to bid on their instruments, and then when they were due, the city of Cleveland didn't have the cash to pay them off. So you got to have that ability to have some options. I like to sleep good at night, and I think you guys said it. There's a lot of us that, even though a variable rate mortgage on our house has some initial interest rates that are lower than what the current fixed rate is, I got to think most of us took fixed rate mortgages on our house because we just wanted to lock that rate in. And when it got lower, we refinanced. we lowered our rates, and now we've refinanced hopefully at as low as it's going to be. And so it's kind of the same with the city. If we keep our money in these one-year notes, it's, you basically are borrowing variable every year. It's subject to a reset. And we've benefited, I've admitted that short-term interest rates have been low. But when interest rates have come down the way they have, I just feel that the sub 2% bogey that we've been talking about, that's the time to flip it, lock it in, and sleep good for the next 15 years.
In my opinion, over the long haul, you don't have that expense that you have year in and year out reissuing the notes. It takes a period of time, but over a 10-year
period. Over a couple-year period, if we didn't have to keep renewing the notes every year, all those issuance costs would go away.
So speaking of that, I should just one last thing. I would hope that perhaps you could amend the legislation to include those costs so that we all know what those costs could be.
Yeah, you got that last spreadsheet, right, where
yeah.
we put those on, so.
We should be part of the legislation.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see how those could be put in. Some of them are estimated because
it's like a kind of bid in a sense, you know. It's
yeah.
like, if you go over next 2 years from now, we change it or whatever.
And Vernon, could we put something in there saying that provided it's below at 2%, you know, for the, because I don't want us to lock in a bond. If it's, you know, you go ahead and say, we're locking bond, it's 2.25% or whatever.
The only problem I think Matt would start smiling at that, we won't know until the bids come in.
Oh, that's true.
And with a competitive bid, you have to accept, correct me if I'm wrong, man, you've got to accept the best bid delivered that day
mm-hmm.
versus if we did a negotiated sale, if council would give us the authority to do a negotiated sale, then we could sit one-on-one with these underwriters and say, Dale, you're the lender. What are you going to lend us money for? And if it's up on less than 2%, we can sign the deal with
them. That's one of your options, right? You put it there.
It might be, but I'm kind of like, look, based on past experience here, I've gone down the path that we're doing a competitive sale. Now, we're going to go and submit bids, and they're going to submit bids blindly, and we would be legally liable if we received bids. Correct me if I'm wrong, man, but if we receive bids that day, we have to accept the best bid. We can't, I don't know if we have that flexibility to say no, do we?
Well, we do have a flexibility to reject bids, but then you have to come back with another alternative financing very soon thereafter.
To pay your notes off.
It's back to your City of Cleveland analogy. You have notes coming due, you have to have a financing in place by December 3rd of this year, otherwise you've got to come up with $17 million worth of cash plus interest. So you can reject bids and you can bid again, but you have to move quickly, if depending on when those bids come in, to reignite or restart that whole process. That takes time, which is why the legislation, again, asking for both pieces of legislation, provides the city with some safety net that if the bond market isn't there, you can turn to the note market, and hopefully it'll be in a better position than the bond market. There was a question about the legislation, and I would tell you this. As a general rule, legislation for bond issues and note issues is drafted to give more flexibility than less flexibility. If you want to pass a motion that suggests that you don't want the city to proceed with bonds, if the bond rate is above 2%, you can do that. But I would not put that in legislation, because if the market does present the problem as disrupted, when you go to approach it and you don't have legislation that provides for that flexibility, you've got to scramble to get legislation in order. That means calling special council meetings and moving quickly. And you may not know that until the time comes and then it's a fire drill. So I would suggest to you, you don't try to tighten things up by way of the legislation giving authorization, and perhaps consider a motion that provides some guidance to the administration. Is that
okay with that? Yeah. Thank you. Good suggestion, man.
Well, you know our feeling as far as I'm very comfortable with the bands for years. So that, but if you can lock us in that,
and we'll kind of have a sense. We keep watching that Emma thing. That's where I get these comparables for, right up to the date of issuance.
Yeah.
We see some big
spike, it's like, oh man, time out, you know, let's reassess, right?
Right.
We won't have that ability to reassess if we're committed going down one path or the other.
Okay. You know?
Okay. And we're not committed to its entireties anyway, correct?
Did you say that again?
So we're not committed to the debt in its entirety. I mean, you can do some bonds and still do some.
Some
we talked about the
yeah, there's that flexibility.
There should be some possibility
sure.
there.
Yep. Right. Yep.
So, so if 2% is the rate that the administration said, if 2% will lock in at that, is there a short-term rate that you would also say, if it's this or less, we will lock in at that?
Well, they seem to stabilize at a half a percent, 0.4%, 0.5%. If they drop down to a quarter percent or something and long-term rates stayed in close to 2%, I guess I'd have to then maybe flip my thinking and say, you know what, I'll gamble another year.
I've read articles that says it's not beyond the realm of possibility for interest rates to go negative. It's possible.
Right. Well, that's in other countries, for sure.
You know, these are strange and untried times, and I just beg you, Vern, if you get handed this power, use it responsibly.
We're going to rely, Vern, on you and Matt.
I have a lot of faith and trust in Matt. I've gotten to know him much better since November. I knew him on the peripheral prior to that, but I'm very comfortable with Matt as the city's financial advisor, and between him on the financial side and Calfee and Taft too. I mean, Taft was perfectly capable of providing the bond counsel too, but as we indicated at the previous meeting, Calfee was very aggressive in their pricing, and Greg O'Brien said they wanted that bad, let them have it. So we've got good legal counsel, we've got financial advice, we've got a business person as mayor, we've had many discussions as council. I think collectively we'll make a good decision.
And Matt, how many years have you been with the City Independence Sale? Because you were with John.
Well, I think I was hired officially by the city in 17, if I'm not mistaken.
Because you were with John originally.
I think it was 16 then. Is that when the original agreement was with the city?
I think so. I remember reading that.
So you've been with us good 4 years already.
But to be clear, I've been doing this for 40 years. So,
right.
While I didn't have the luxury of working with Independence directly until 2016, I'd like to think that I have some working knowledge of the municipal market. Councilman Senek, you raise a good point about interest rates going negative. I would tell you this, municipal buyers will not buy municipal bonds if they're negative, right? You wouldn't buy one, nor would anybody else. They'd put their money in cash, or they'll buy gold or something else. There's a rate at which these municipal buyers start to push back and look at other alternatives, and we saw that very thing happen in March, where everyone pulled back and said, we're not buying anything. We're going to take all our money out of every investment. We're going to put it in cash, and interest rates spike. In every product, interest rates spike in terms of the monies that you have to pay back. And we saw short-term notes go from low, mid 60, 70 basis points to north of 250, 2.50%. It was a 2% move in a matter of a week. It can happen. I think the whole point of the legislation is not to circumvent council by way of abdicating authority to the administration. It's to provide you with the luxury of having the benefit of a safety net should the markets get disrupted again. And who knows what happens when this, we'll go on in the fall when school starts, and perhaps there's a continuation of this surge. Who knows? But we do know that the markets have moved considerably more volatile in the last couple, 3 months than they had in quite a long time. Don't get me wrong, it's happened before, but it's happened again, and it could happen again. It's happened again recently, and it could happen again between now and the end of the year. That's a concern. And when we're talking about renewing $17 million worth of notes, it's nice to have plan A and plan B.
Very good. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
I guess we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Very good. Thank you, John. It was nice seeing everybody in person.
Yes.
And we have a hybrid here. Thank you, Kathleen.
Thanks, everybody. Around in that second street meeting there.
Thank you, Vern.
Thanks, everybody, for being here.